This is the Power of Your Subconscious Mind podcast, a chapter-by-chapter reading of Joseph Murphy's The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, which is in the public domain. This book was written in 1963, and although the language is a bit arcane at times, the concepts are still cutting edge. I'm your host, Lane Smith Brown, and I am a coach at lanesmithbrown.com and the host of the Unleash Your Life podcast. I help my students apply the concepts in this book by helping them understand what is really playing in their subconscious mind. That's a mystery to most people, and why so many people read or listen to this book and don't get the results they want. Check out the links in the show notes or go directly to lanesmithbrown.com. The Power of Your Subconscious Mind, brought to you by WeirdHummingbirds.com. This book is in the public domain. Chapter 16. Your Subconscious Mind and Harmonious Human Relations. A vital concept you have learned from studying this book is that your subconscious mind is like a recording machine that faithfully reproduces whatever you impress upon it. This is one of the reasons the golden rule is so central to creating and maintaining a harmonious balance in your relationships with others. All things whatsoever ye would that men should do unto you, do ye even so to them. Matthew 7:12. This lesson has both outer and inner meanings. The inner meaning concerns the connection between your subconscious and subconscious mind. To paraphrase the scripture, as you would want people to think about you, think you about them in like manner. As you would want people to feel about you, feel you also about them in like manner. As you would want people to act toward you, act you toward them in like manner. For example, you may be polite and courteous to someone in your office, but when her back is turned, you are very critical and resentful toward her in your mind. Such negative thoughts are highly destructive to you. It is like taking poison. The negative energy you are generating robs you of vitality, enthusiasm, strength, guidance, and goodwill. As these negative thoughts and emotions sink into your subconscious, they cause all kinds of difficulties and maladies in your life. The master key to happy relationships with others. Judge not, that ye not be judged. For with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged, and with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. Matthew 7:1-2. The key to harmonious relations with others lies in the close study of these verses and the application of the inner truths they represent. To judge is to think, to arrive at a mental verdict or conclusion in your mind. The thought you have about the other person is your thought because you are thinking it. Your thoughts are creative. Therefore, you actually create in your own experience what you think and feel about the other person. The suggestion you give to another, you give to yourself as well, because your mind is the creative medium. This is why it is said, for with what judgment ye judge, ye shall be judged. This means that in implying standards and criteria to others, you create those standards and criteria in your subconscious, which then applies them to you. Once you know this law and understand the way your subconscious mind works, you will always be careful to think, feel, and act right towards others. For in doing so, you are creating a situation of right action, feeling, and thought toward yourself. And with what measure ye meet, it shall be measured to you again. The good you do for others comes back to you in like measure, and the evil you do returns to you by the law of your own mind. If someone cheats and deceives another, he is actually cheating and deceiving himself. His sense of guilt and mood of loss inevitably will attract loss to him in some way at some time. His subconscious records his mental act and reacts according to the mental intention or motivation. Your subconscious mind is impersonal and unchanging, neither considering persons nor respecting religious affiliations or institutions of any kind. It is neither compassionate nor vindictive. The way you think, feel, and act towards others returns at last upon yourself. The daily headlines made him sick. Begin now to observe yourself. Observe your reactions to people, conditions, and circumstances. Record them in a notebook for later study. How do you respond to the events and the news of the day? It makes no difference if all the other people were wrong and you alone were right. If the news disturbs you, it is your evil because your negative emotions robbed you of peace and harmony. A woman wrote to me to ask for help with her husband. She explained that he went into a rage every time he read what certain columnists wrote in the newspaper. She added that this constant reaction of anger and suppressed rage on his part was very bad for his high blood pressure. His doctor had told him that he had to find some way to reduce his stress through emotional reconditioning. I invited this man to come see me. I explained to him the way his mind functions. He understood that it was emotionally immature to get angry over an article in the newspaper, but he had not known the damage his anger was causing to his own mind and body. He began to realize that he should give the columnist the freedom to express himself, even if he disagreed with him politically, religiously, or in any other way. In the same manner, the columnist ought to give him the freedom to write a letter to the newspaper disagreeing with his published statements. He learned that he could disagree without being disagreeable. He awakened to the simple truth that it is never what some other person says or does that affects him. Rather, it is his own reaction to what is said or done that matters. This explanation helped this man achieve a cure. He realized that with a little practice, he could master this morning tantrums. His wife later told me that he eventually learned to laugh at what the columnist he so disliked had to say. He also learned to laugh at himself for reacting so strongly. The newspaper articles no longer have power to disturb, annoy, or irritate him. His hypertension is more under control as a result of his increased emotional poise and serenity. I hate women, but I like men. Cynthia R. was an executive secretary with a large corporation. She came to me because she felt very bitter towards some of the women in her office. She believed they were gossiping and, as she said, spreading vicious lies about her. When I asked, she admitted that she had had many problems in her relationships with other women. She said, "I hate women, but I like men." As I continued to talk with her, I discovered that Cynthia spoke to the people she supervised in a very haughty, imperious, and irritable tone of voice. There was a certain pomposity in her way of speaking, and I could see where her tone of voice would affect some people unpleasantly. She did not realize this. For her, the important point was that her co-workers took delight in making things difficult for her. If all the people in your office or factory annoy you, isn't it possible that this annoyance and turmoil may be due to some subconscious pattern or mental projection that is coming from you? We all know that a dog will react ferociously if you hate or fear dogs. Animals pick up your subconscious vibrations and react accordingly. Is it so outrageous to say that human beings are just as sensitive as dogs, cats, and other animals in this regard? To this woman who hated women, I suggested a process of prayer. I explained to her that when she began to identify herself with spiritual values and commenced to affirm the truths of life, her hatred of women would completely disappear, along with the vocal patterns and mannerisms that communicated that hatred to others. She was surprised to learn that our emotions show up in our speech, actions, writing, and in all phases of our life. As a result of our conversation, Cynthia stopped behaving in her typical resentful and angry way. She established a pattern of prayer that she practiced regularly, systematically, and conscientiously in the office. This was the prayer she used with such success. I think, speak, and act lovingly, quietly, and peacefully. I now radiate love, peace, tolerance, and kindliness to all those who criticized me and gossiped about me. I anchor my thoughts on peace, harmony, and goodwill to all. Whenever I am about to react negatively, I say firmly to myself, I think, speak, and act from the standpoint of the principle of harmony, health, and peace within myself. Creative intelligence leads, rules, and guides me in all my ways. The practice of this prayer transformed her life. She found that the atmosphere of criticism and annoyance in her workplace gradually disappeared. Her co-workers became friends and companions in life's journey. She discovered the truth that we have no one to blame and no one to change but ourselves. His inner speech held back his promotion. One day, Jim S., a sales representative, came to see me. He was deeply upset by the difficulties he had working with the sales manager of his organization. Jim had been with the company 10 years without receiving any promotion or recognition of any kind. He showed me his sales figures. I could easily see that they were higher proportionately than those of other sales representatives in his territory. His explanation was that the sales manager did not like him. He claimed that he was unjustly treated. At conferences, the manager ridiculed his suggestions and at times was actively rude to him. After discussing his situation in greater detail, I suggested to Jim that the cause was to a great degree within himself. His concept and belief about his superior bore witness to the reaction of this man. The measure we meet shall be measured to us again. Jim's mental measure or concept of the sales manager was that he was mean, prejudiced, and cantankerous. Jim was filled with bitterness and hostility toward the executive. On his way to work, he conducted a vigorous conversation with himself, filled with criticisms, mental arguments, recriminations, and denunciations of his sales manager. What Jim gave out mentally, he was inevitably bound to get back. By the end of our conversation, Jim realized that his inner speech was highly destructive. The intensity and force of his silent thoughts and emotions, the mental condemnation and vilification of the sales manager that he rehearsed, entered into his own subconscious mind. This brought about the negative responses from his boss, as well as creating other personal, physical, and emotional disorders. At my urging, Jim began to pray frequently as follows. I am the only thinker in my universe. I am responsible for what I think about my boss. My sales manager is not responsible for the way I think about him. I refuse to give power to any person, place, or thing to annoy me or disturb me. I wish health, success, peace of mind, and happiness for my boss. I sincerely wish him well, and I know he is divinely guided in all his ways. He repeated this prayer out loud, slowly, quietly, and feelingly, knowing that his mind is like a garden, and whatever he plants in the garden will come forth like seeds after their kind. I also taught him to practice visualization or mental imagery prior to sleep. He created a scenario in which his superior congratulated him on his fine work, praised his zeal and enthusiasm, and remarked on the wonderful response he obtained from customers. He felt the reality of all of this. He felt his boss's handshake, heard the tone of his voice, and saw him smile. He made a real mental movie, dramatizing it to the best of his ability. Night after night, he replayed that mental movie, knowing that his subconscious mind was the receptive medium on which his conscious imagery would be impressed. Gradually, by a process of what we can think of as mental and spiritual osmosis, the impression was made on his subconscious mind. The expression automatically came forth. Jim's sales manager subsequently called him up to San Francisco, congratulated him, and gave him a promotion to division sales manager, with greatly increased responsibilities and a substantial raise in salary. Once Jim changed his concept and estimate of his boss, his subconscious mind saw to it that his boss responded accordingly. Becoming emotionally mature. What someone else says cannot really annoy or irritate you unless you permit it to disturb you. The only path by which another person can upset you is through your own thought. If you get angry, you have to go through four stages in your mind. You begin to think about what was said. You decide to get angry and generate an emotion of rage. Then you decide to act. Perhaps you talk back and react in kind. As you see, the thought, emotion, reaction, and action all take place in your own mind. What does it mean to be emotionally mature? It means that you move beyond the natural but childish tendency to respond negatively to the criticism and resentment of others. No one likes to be criticized or belittled. However, we have the ability to choose how to react when it happens. The mature choice is to refrain from responding in a similarly negative way. Responding in kind means to descend to the level of belittling, criticism, and to become one with the negative atmosphere of the other. Identify yourself with your own aim in life. Do not permit any person, place, or thing to deflect you from your inner sense of peace, tranquility, and radiant health. The meaning of love in harmonious human relations. Sigmund Freud, the founder of psychoanalysis and one of the most important figures in the history of psychology, said that unless the personality has love, it sickens and dies. Love includes understanding, goodwill, and respect for the divinity in the other person. The more love and goodwill you emanate and exude, the more comes back to you. If you puncture someone else's ego and wound her estimate of herself, you cannot gain her goodwill. Recognize that everyone wants to be loved and appreciated. Everyone needs to feel important in the world. Realize that the other person is conscious of her worth. Like yourself, she feels the dignity of being an expression of the one life principle animating all people. As you do this consciously and knowingly, you build up the other person and she returns your love and goodwill. She hated her audiences. Marie C. had always dreamed of being an actress. She studied theater in college, then had the good fortune to be hired by an important regional theater company in a part of the country she did not know at all. The first time she performed with the company, the audience booed her. Dismayed and angry, she decided that the people of the region were stupid, ignorant, and backward. She hated them all. After a miserable time, she was dropped from the company. She moved back to the area where she had grown up and left the stage to work as a waitress. One day, a friend invited her to go to a lecture in Town Hall in New York City. The topic was how to get along with ourselves. This lecture changed her life. She began to see that she had overreacted to her early experience with the regional company. She admitted to herself that the play she had been in that first time was not good, and that, as a new member of the company, she had probably not been at her best. The fault did not lie with the people in the audience, but with the way she accepted their reaction, then turned back on them in the form of negative energy. Marie decided to return to the stage and to her lifelong dream of being an actress. She began to pray sincerely for the audience and for herself. She poured out love and goodwill every night before stepping onto the stage. She made it a habit to claim that the peace of God filled the hearts of all present and that all present were lifted up and inspired. During each performance, she sent out love vibrations to the audience. Today, she has an important career in theater. She transmits her goodwill and esteem to others, and they return in kind. Handling difficult people. It should not come as a surprise that some people in the world are difficult. They are twisted and distorted mentally. They are malconditioned. Many are mental delinquents who have become argumentative, uncooperative, cantankerous, cynical, and sour on life. They are sick psychologically. Their minds have become deformed and distorted, perhaps because of experiences they have had in the past. What do you do when you have to deal with someone like this? The temptation is to turn their negative energy back on them in the form of dislike. But to do that, you first have to take their negativity into yourself, with all the bad effects that will have on your own being. Strive instead to return good for evil. This creates an armor that keeps their difficult and unpleasant attitudes from affecting you, and your transmission of compassion and understanding will set in motion the process of changing them. Misery loves company. The hateful, frustrated, distorted, and twisted personality is out of tune with the infinite. The person resents those who are peaceful, happy, and joyous. Usually he criticizes, condemns, and vilifies those who have been very good and kind to him. His attitude is this: why should they be so happy when I am so miserable? He wants to drag them down to his own level. The old saying is still true that misery loves company. Once you understand this, you remain unmoved, calm, and dispassionate. A man named Bruce T., who attended my lectures in London, told me his experience with this process. He'd become active in a volunteer organization that was concerned with beautifying the community where he lived. Most of the volunteers were genuinely interested in working on planting gardens, sprucing up rundown areas, and repairing dilapidated buildings. One member, however, opposed every measure that anyone suggested. More than that, he constantly attacked the motives of the others. He made the meetings of the group so unpleasant that attendance began to decline. Some of the other members came to Bruce. They suggested that they band together and expel the grouch from the organization. He was about to go along with the plan when he realized that to do so would be to perpetuate the man's twisted attitudes within himself. Instead, he began to visualize the man changing into a pleasant, cooperative member of the group. Before each meeting, Bruce went into a quiet corner and repeated, "I think, speak, and act in true accord with the principle of harmony and peace within myself. All who bind themselves to the goals of our organization do so with kindness and purpose in divine order. There is no discord, no unpleasantness. Creative intelligence leads, rules, and guides us in all we do." After several weeks, the man who had caused so much trouble proposed a new initiative. He presented it in such an agreeable and cooperative manner that he won the approval of everyone else in the organization, including those who had wanted to kick him out. Empathy in human relations. A young woman named Alice O visited me recently. She told me that she had long hated another young woman in the office where she worked. Her reason was that the other woman was prettier, happier, and more prosperous than she. The crowning blow came when the other woman became engaged to marry the CEO of the company, whom Alice had long admired. One day after the marriage took place, the woman she so disliked came into work with her daughter from a previous marriage. Alice had not known her co-worker had a child or even that she had been married before. Because of the congenital problems, the woman's daughter wore a steel leg brace. Alice overheard her say to her mother, "Mummy, is this where my new daddy works too? I love this place because it is so full of people I love." "My heart suddenly went out to that little girl," Alice told me. "I knew how happy she must feel. I got a vision of how happy the woman was against odds I had not even known about. All of a sudden, I felt love for her. I went into her office and wished her all the happiness in the world, and I meant it." In that moment, Alice experienced what psychologists call empathy. This is not the same thing as sympathy, in which we understand the feelings of others. It is more. It means imaginatively projecting yourself into the mental attitudes and states of the other person. When Alice projected her mental mood or the feeling of her heart into that of the other woman, it was as if she began to think through the other woman's experience. She was thinking and feeling as the other woman and also as the child, because she had also projected herself into the mind of the child. Any time you feel tempted to injure or think ill of another, project yourself mentally into the mind of Moses and think from the standpoint of the Ten Commandments. If you are prone to be envious, jealous, or angry, project yourself into the mind of Jesus and think from that standpoint, and you will feel the truth of the words, "Love ye one another." Appeasement never wins. Do not permit people to take advantage of you and gain their point by temper tantrums, crying jags, or other forms of emotional blackmail. These people are dictators who try to enslave you and make you do their bidding. Be firm but kind and refuse to yield. Appeasement never wins. Refuse to contribute to their delinquency, selfishness, and possessiveness. Remember, do that which is right. You are here to fulfill your ideal and remain true to the eternal verities and spiritual values of life, which are eternal. Give no one in all the world the power to deflect you from your goal, your aim in life, which is to express your hidden talents to the world, to serve humanity, and to reveal more and more of God's wisdom, truth, and beauty to all the people in the world. Remain true to your ideal. Know definitively and absolutely that whatever contributes to your peace, happiness, and fulfillment must of necessity bless all people who walk the earth. The harmony of the whole, for the whole is in the part, and the part is in the whole. All you owe the other, as Paul says, is love, and love is the fulfilling of the law of health, happiness, and peace of mind. Profitable pointers in human relations. Your subconscious mind is a recording machine that reproduces your habitual thinking. Think good of the other, and you are actually thinking good about yourself. A hateful or resentful thought is a mental poison. Do not think ill of another, for to do so is to think ill of yourself. You are the only thinker in your universe, and your thoughts are creative. Your mind is a creative medium. Therefore, what you think and feel about the other, you are bringing to pass in your own life. This is the psychological meaning of the golden rule. As you would that others should think about you, think you about them in the same manner. To cheat, rob, or defraud another brings lack, loss, and limitations to yourself. Your subconscious mind records your inner motivations, thoughts, and feelings. When these are negative, loss, limitation, and trouble come to you in countless ways. What you do to another, you are doing to yourself. The good you do, the kindness proffered, the love and good you send forth will come back to you multiplied in many ways. You are responsible for the way you think about the other. Remember, the other person is not responsible for the way you think about him or her. Your thoughts are reproduced. What are you thinking now about the other person? Become emotionally mature and permit other people to differ with you. They have a perfect right to disagree with you, and you have the same freedom to disagree with them. You can disagree without being disagreeable. Just as animals are able to pick up fear vibrations, many people are just as sensitive. The thoughts you believe are hidden are actually broadcast by your voice, your facial expressions, and your body language. This is true both for positive and negative thoughts. Your inner speech, representing your silent thoughts and feelings, is experienced in the reactions of others toward you. Wish for the others what you wish for yourself. This is the key to harmonious relationships. Change your concept and estimate of your employer. Feel and know he or she is practicing the golden rule and the law of love, and he or she will respond accordingly. Another person cannot annoy you or irritate you except if you permit him or her to do so. Your thought is creative. You can bless the other person. If someone calls you an insulting name, you have the freedom to reply, "God's peace fills your soul." Love is the answer to getting along with others. Love is understanding goodwill and a respect for the divinity of the other. Have compassion and understanding for those whose negative conditioning has made them difficult and unpleasant. The divine spark is within them, just as it is within everyone. To understand all is to forgive all. Rejoice in the success, promotion, and good fortune of others. In doing so, you attract good fortune to yourself. Never yield to another's emotional scenes and tantrums. Appeasement never wins. Do not be a doormat. Adhere to that which is right. Stick to your ideal, knowing that the mental outlook that gives you peace, happiness, and joy is right, good, and true. What blesses you blesses all. All you owe any person in the world is love, and love is wishing for everyone what you wish for yourself: health, happiness, and all the blessings of life. That's the end of this chapter. There's so much good stuff here, but if you don't address the self-sabotaging beliefs and behaviors in your subconscious mind, nothing will change for you. Don't be a listener, be a doer. Get the change you're seeking. The show notes contain links to lanesmithbrown.com, and for more helpful information on how to really apply the concepts in this book, check out my Unleash Your Life podcast. This is Lane Smith Brown, signing off.